I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
Time for that Monday basketball talk here on Drive Time Sports. Always looking forward to this segment. Our next guest joins us every Monday. He is James Holis, our NBA analyst. And James and I actually started texting last night talking about what we wanted to get into. Of course, Summer League in Las Vegas. It's been another rousing success, something that the NBA has done very, very well. And a little dark cloud, I guess we could say, over Summer League. It's been LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers situation. We'll talk about that and some of the other storylines. James, always a pleasure to get you on. I appreciate the time.
Real NBA talk being overshadowed by LeBron drama. It's like Groundhog Day.
I would say I never heard of this, right? I do want to point out, and I've said this a million times here on the show, when I was in high school, and I got to go all the way back, and this is a long time ago, I'm going to age myself here, but I specifically remember going to the Utah Summer League. The Denver Nuggets were in town because Summer League, it was not all-encompassing in Las Vegas. We had a bunch of different Summer League locations. Carmelo Anthony and the Denver Nuggets came in. It was Melo's rookie year. Cost like $10 to get in. And they had it at a junior college. And you could pretty much sit wherever you wanted. To see where Summer League is today, I know a lot of people marvel about the NFL, right? The draft, it's a three-day weekend event now, the NFL draft, and it's prime time. I mean, you can't miss it. Everybody's talking about the NFL draft. The NBA draft may miss that spark, but I'll tell you, they do Summer League really, really well. And I think you got to give Adam Silver really a lot of credit for the way he has made the NBA kind of a 12-month sport now.
Yeah, even just a couple years ago, me and one of my buddies went up there just for a day to catch some games and talk to some NBA people. And, like, we comfortably sat, like, halfway at the bleachers. No obstructions. We could hear each other talk. And now, you know, from what I understand, those flag and Bronny tickets were going for, $3,000-$4,000 or some nonsense, which is insane. So, yeah, man, it's entertainment. And that's what I always say. Basketball entertainment, first and foremost, is a business entertainment. And it keeps people watching. Keeps people talking. You got to love it.
As far as the business is concerned, the Dallas Mavericks have made a business decision as they've decided to shut down Cooper Flagg for the remainder of the NBA Summer League. This bothers me a little bit. I'm not going to lie. This bothers me a little bit. Now, I understand during the season, right, we get a lot of DNPs. We get a lot of rest. We get a lot of players not going on back-to-back days. You know, you're going to rest some of your older talent. The San Antonio Spurs and Greg Popovich made this popular like 15 years ago. But to see this in Summer League, James, I got to be honest, I kind of have a problem with it.
So I liked watching Cooper Flagg play. He had a great game. At least he's going out with on a high note with confidence. So I also think about this, though. Do you remember not a few years ago, probably almost a decade now, there was a Team USA blue and white game.
Paul George.
And Paul George went up for a dunk, and he snapped his leg because the stanchion was too close. So I do get it, right? This is a player about to embark on hopefully a 10, 15, 20-year-long career. He is a franchise cornerstone for a franchise that really needs to win right now. We won't learn anything else by watching him play. It's all about him getting him ready for the NBA season and training and get his body right. They did say game one, he had dead legs. He was, not in great basketball shape. Game two, he redeemed himself, looked a lot better. So I think I actually agree with the decision, right? I think we know Dallas needs a big W, a big win. And just drafting him was already a win. They're playing with house money. I get it. I'm fine with them playing it safe. This is their franchise future, their franchise cornerstone. What else do we have to learn? I would love to see him play more. I understand also why the front office said that's enough.
I guess I can see both sides of the equation, and maybe you can shed some light on this. One of the things that I just don't understand, I mean, these are glorified exhibition games. That's what these are. They're even worse than exhibition games, right? Because when you take a look at a Summer League roster, like 90% of the roster is not going to be there when we start the next NBA season, right? I mean, that's a fair number, right? 80 to 90% of these guys are not going to be playing for this organization. So in my mind, it's almost like a glorified pickup game, which these guys are going to play in regardless if they're on the court in Summer League or if they're off the court in their hometown in the summer.
So I agree with that also, but another thing popped in my mind. Yesterday I was watching the Dylan Harper highlights.
Yeah.
He has a break and he goes up for a dunk. That backup center for the other team. I don't know his name, but guess what? He's trying to get known. He's trying to show he's an NBA player. He ran back, and he contested the shot. Dylan Harper ended up going, you know, tumbling to the ground, and it was kind of a dangerous play. It was a kind of dangerous play. And maybe playing pickup with his friends at home or whatever, they're not going to make that kind of play because that's just not how those guys, you know, they understand, sure, to play hard, it's pickup. And I completely understand from our end of it, like, hey, these guys are going to play basketball and get themselves in shape. I also understand from watching, you know, thinking Paul George and watching that play with Dylan Harper got whacked, and it wasn't an incredibly reckless play, but that guy was definitely, like you said, not an NBA player. And I think in most situations he would have known, the Dylan Harper, number 2 pick, I shouldn't go up here and possibly take his head off and send him tumbling. So I'm with you. I see both sides. Entertainment. The fans want to come see these young players show their stuff on an NBA type professional stage. But at the same time, like you said, glorified pickup. And why would you, especially when you have Cooper Flagg, putting him in that position? I don't think if he was home this summer, he wouldn't be. He'd be working on his body. He wouldn't be doing too much pickup. And I think that's what the Dallas Mavericks are going to make sure he's doing to keep him as safe as possible this summer.
As far as the outings that we saw from Cooper Flagg, I mean, we talk about that Laker game against Bronny. Wasn't great. Had 10 points, shot 5 of 21. Had a beautiful bounce-back performance, but he scored 31, I believe, on Saturday against Dylan Harper and the Spurs. And in that game, he was much, you know, significantly better, much more efficient from the floor. I know that there's been a lot of Cooper Flagg talk. I will tell you, man, I've been very, very entertained by Dylan Harper as well. I think Harper has actually had a tremendous summer league.
He's been, he was amazing. Vijay Edgecombe.
Yes.
Incredible.
Yep.
I'm really, really excited about this coming season. Not because there's going to be so much parity with, you know, we said it before, injuries and aprons have changed the landscape of the NBA this coming season, where it's probably more open. Past the Thunder, it's more open than anything we've seen in a long time. But these young guys are coming in. It's not just one or two. Like, we have 4 or 5. Hey, the kid, what's his name? Trey Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That kid was amazing the other night.
Yeah.
Shot was so pure. Like the kid Fear. Like, I hear all these names. I know I hear these names, and I'm not a big college guy, so when I watch the highlights, I'm like, I don't see the big deal. I see 4 or 5 guys who look like they might have really high level NBA careers coming up. You know, so it's exciting. It really is.
Again, James Holish joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball and everything that's going on in the summer league. So, of course, we got summer games going on. The Lakers are out there on the floor. LeBron comes. He wants to watch his son Bronny play. Dave McMinimum asks him for an interview. He says, I got nothing to say. We have now heard that there are 4 teams that reached out to Rich Paul, not the Los Angeles Lakers, but they reached out to Rich Paul. Those 4 teams being the Mavericks. We know the Warriors, we know the Cavs and the Clippers. Those are the teams that have reached out potentially about a trade. It seems like LeBron is playing this really close to his vest. He's not saying a whole lot. He's letting social media handle this. You start looking around at the feasible trade options. And yeah, I mean, based off gutting your roster, those 4 teams could make a move for LeBron. It does seem like it is getting increasingly likely he's played his last game in a Laker uniform, at least in my mind. It just seems like the Lakers don't have any interest. They could squash this right now if they wanted to. They could have released a statement saying that LeBron opted into his deal. They have not done that. LeBron has had every opportunity to squash this. Rich Paul's had every opportunity to squash this. It just seems, James, like it might be hard to see LeBron going back and playing for the Lakers based off everything we've heard over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and he really has put both all the franchises involved in a really tough spot because LeBron James is still great. He's still playing at a certain all-NBA type level. And he will have moments when he looks like still like, you know, hey, I'm the best player in the NBA. He also, paying $50 million and trading $50 million worth of actual assets for him, whatever team that's going to trade for him is going to look completely different with him in tow. So it's an unbelievable position. I can't imagine any other high-level aging star trying to pull this off where they opt into $50 million and then demand a trade or try to finagle a trade somewhere. I mean, you talked about it and how kind of strange it was, and it's gotten stranger every passing day about him opting in, and now the Lakers, they're ready to move on.
It's funny because, yeah, this whole thing could have been over and done with, right? All he had to do was decline that final year, and he could go really wherever he wanted to go for any price range that was feasible for him to go to a championship contender. I think that's what makes this so interesting to me, that a guy who, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, we see him suit up 150 more games tops. I think that's what we get out of LeBron the remainder of his NBA career. I'll put that over-under sitting at 150 games. For someone that is still playing at the level that he is playing at, to opt into that deal, and that's his money, that's his right, but then to complain about the situation is odd to me. It's unlike anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, super odd. Like, you know, I guess, you know, that people are postulating, maybe pouting a little bit because he didn't get his 1+1. And yeah, like, it's, I don't know. He's been so amazing. I think he's always kind of thought one step ahead, or at least had his finger on the pulse of where teams were with him and his standing in the league. And this is one of the few times where I feel like maybe he's kind of maybe he's shooting a little off the mark as far as his value to the NBA in relation to how old he is. Because the NBA, he is an NBA touchstone. He's going to go down. He's a top two, and there's a lot of people not number two. But at this stage of his career, teams aren't wanting to invest big money and big time in him because he is a defensive liability. He's going to play 60-65 games, hopefully, at a pretty high level. And there are games he's going to look like he's, you know, on the wrong side of 40. And this is where he is. And so, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see how they recalibrate around him, either in Los Angeles or one of these other teams. And I don't know. His swan song, is he going to be able to take a team to the finals? We got to see.
He's not going to be able to take a team to the finals. He's not. Now, can he join a team that can get to the finals? Yes. But to say that, I just don't think he can. And to go back to what you were saying a moment ago about not getting the one-on-one, it's been a few years, but we had Brian Windhorst on the show, and we were talking about LeBron being a billion-dollar athlete, the first billion-dollar athlete. And, you know, I have to believe, to some extent, it is a little bit insulting to the first billionaire athlete, the billion-dollar athlete, to realize that he is no longer holding anyone within this within the league hostage. That's got to be somewhat of a humbling situation to be in. And I don't mean that as insulting to LeBron James at all. Over the course of his 23-year, 22-year career, he has been exactly that guy, right? I mean, the league moved in accordance to LeBron. And the organization that he is with now, which happens to be one of the most storied, they're not maneuvering around LeBron James. That's got to be tough. It's got to be.
I mean, hey, he just lost his benefactor, Jeannie Buss, right? They were really tight. But that's out of the window. The fact that they traded for Luka was, by all accounts, without really letting him in it, you know, into the machinations of it, that's got to be telling. They traded away his buddy Anthony Davis that he, you know, he called for. That's a big deal. And like you said, now didn't get the 1+1. They cannot say we're going to mortgage the future for what you want, LeBron James. Now we have to start mortgaging our future for what is best for Luka Doncic. So I can only imagine the feeling, like you said, at one point, you are a billion-dollar athlete. You're still the creme de la creme as far as popularity and fame. But the NBA is now shifting away from you and Steph Curry slightly because they have to. They can't wait till the last minute here. They have to start transitioning to the new age of stars. And it's like even Steph and like the fact that they really can make the moves that people thought they should have made. You know, they really haven't done anything. And there's a time when guys love to come play in Golden State because like second tier vet role guys could come in there and possibly win a championship. That's not happening these days. So we're in the transitional phase in the NBA, and I love it. I love it, but it must be tough for those stars that are on the way out.
Yeah, we see this all the time, right? I mean, there was the Kobe Duncan Dirk era, right? It was the same thing. This is a conversation that is maybe a little bit more amplified today because of the world that we live in. But it's not the first time this has happened in the history of the NBA. I think that's also important to remember.
It's not, but also we've never seen a star play at this level as LeBron has at this age.
Nope.
Right? And in a lot of ways, that's the problem. Didn't he make All-NBA last year? That's the issue. He looks so good in so many ways. But due to that age, and we know it's going to come to a halt here soon, the NBA is shifting away. So it's fascinating, and like you said, it's not the first time. But with Kobe, it was an injury. So that we had that. We had a line of demarcation. With LeBron, it's just like he's not going to fade out. How is this going to happen?
Again, James Hulish joining us right now as we talk NBA basketball. I do want to talk about one of LeBron's old teams in the Cleveland Cavaliers because the news broke out today that Dan Gilbert is rewarding his front office. Colby Altman, who is the Cavs president, you can go ahead and say he's the architect of one of the top teams in the NBA, receives a contract extension, as does the general manager. You just take a look at everyone within the front office, right? The assistant general manager as well, Brendan Weems, he gets a multi-year extension. Dan Gilbert rewarding the front office for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I like this story, James. I really do, because as I said, Altman is kind of the architect of what we've seen in Cleveland. I think this offseason, you know, they make this deal, Ty Jerome bringing in Lonzo Ball. They go out, they re-sign Sam Merrill. They go out, they bring back veteran big man and Larry Nance Jr. Like, they've made these moves, and to see the front office kind of get rewarded by an owner like Dan Gilbert, who at one particular time was not really in the best of lights for Cleveland Cavalier fans, I like this story. It's a feel-good story.
As a Celtics fan, I want to be able to kind of rain on the Cavaliers' parade, but you can't, right? They were at a point once LeBron left where they looked okay, right? But yeah, they definitely looked like they had a long way to go. And it's been a remarkable turnaround. I'm not going to ding them too much for their postseason failures last couple years, because I mean we can't say on one hand, hey, it's not just about rings and ring culture going overboard, and then kill a team that's very successful, amazingly successful. They were able to re-sign Donovan Mitchell. They got their, you know, so they are doing everything right, and they're winning a lot of basketball games. They by almost every metric, they've been a success the last couple seasons. We can't just say championship or bust, because that's not what it's about. And I agree with you. There's a saying that it's harder for a player to go from okay, mediocre to good. It's harder to go from good to great than it is to go from mediocre to good. And so that's a true statement even when it comes to teams. The Cavaliers did a great job going from just a middle of the pack team or whatever. Now they're a contender. They're not the contender, but they won a lot of games, due to some injuries, they've had some problems. So just because they're not an upper echelon Thunder level team doesn't mean they haven't had a lot of success, and you got to reward that. And it's about sustainability next, right? Can they keep a high level of play for the next 5, 6, 7 years? That would be a huge success story for them.
And I remember when they made the deal for Donovan Mitchell. I mean, obviously that was all anyone was talking about on the state of Utah whenever the NBA was brought up. I remember that deal being kind of like a roll of the dice. Did Donovan really want to play in Cleveland? Because there were all these rumors about New York. So they roll the dice, they bring in Donovan Mitchell, and they made the situation so appealing that they were able to re-up with him. That in itself is a cause for celebration, because I remember the day the deal was done, I didn't think that Donovan Mitchell would be in Cleveland long-term. I really didn't.
I want to say 90% of NBA analysts and writers and prognosticators said the same thing. Even just last year he signed that extension, I remember leading up to that, where is Donovan going to go? Miami? Are the Knicks going to get involved? It was almost like a foregone conclusion that he was leaving, and it was a bit of surprise when he re-signed. So good on the Cavaliers. I mean, that's what success is that you're building a team that guys want to play for. And sure, they can give more money, but that's the whole point of trading for guys. That's why I never want to hear those Warriors fans argue with me about why they didn't trade for certain players. Oh, they didn't want to be here. You don't know. The point is to get them in the house, make them see how great your team is, so that they do a 180, or they actually come around, because you got Steph Curry in town. Golden State should be doing the same kind of thing, and they're not. So good on the Cavaliers for swinging big and making it work.
Let's end with this. Since we've talked about trades, we've talked about the Lakers, we talked about Cooper Flagg, I want to go back and get your thought on the supposed revisionist history, because it seems like the narrative is changing day by day with the Dallas Mavericks. And I had mentioned to you just by text message last night, Dallas is loaded, and you kind of pumped the brakes on that a little bit. It seems like the outcry and the negativity that was surrounding the Luka Doncic trade not that long ago is kind of evaporated a bit. And maybe winning the lottery and getting the first pick and getting Cooper Flagg, and again, this Maverick team was very, very active right in the offseason, maybe that softened that a little bit. But I, you know, speaking of 180s, I can't recall the last time I seen a fan base do a 180. I mean, that's all Maverick fans wanted to talk about, was how you got to get rid of Nico, fire Nico. They're chanting fire Nico. Now all of a sudden you look at this Maverick team and it's like, it's a pretty good team.
They are, and it's funny. I talked to some of their fans. It's still fire Nico. They're happy, and getting Cooper Flagg has really lessened the blow of losing Luka. But it's still fire and ego. The fans haven't forgotten. Just because the lottery gods have looked down on Dallas and shined, they haven't forgotten. And so until we actually probably get some games in their belt and they start winning, and it's probably still going to be fire and ego. They'll just say it with a smile on their face. So, yeah, Dallas has done a great job of retooling and pivoting. I am not as high as a lot of people. D'Angelo Russell, to me, is not, he's a loser basketball player. And so until Kyrie gets back, you know, they have a loser basketball player manning the point guard position. And then we saw Kyrie is a lot like Anthony Davis. They're both second-tier NBA stars that need a 1A to kind of make them, to slot them in the right positions. So now you got two secondary guys, two Robins, who need a Batman. And so that's where I am with them. I'm not sure exactly how far they're going to go, but there's talent, there's excitement. They are deep. They have versatile bigs. And, yeah, I mean, Kyrie's box office. Anthony Davis is still one of the best, you know, three best defenders on the planet. They are, and then Cooper Flagg looks like he's going to be amazing. So even if this year they don't really get it done, I don't really believe in them. The chemistry is going to take some time. They definitely are in a much better place than they were 6 months ago.
He's James Solis again, always kind enough to join us, James. Always a pleasure to get you on. Before I let you go, you got to tell us more about where we can find you here in these summer months talking basketball.
You can find me on Drive Time Radio once a week. Formerly known as Twitter. My favorite player was Scottie Pippen, so at Snotty Drippin, a play on his name, and where the sky is blue. And almost every social media, you can find me there just talking basketball and posting memes and just retweeting stuff.
Love it. James, always a pleasure to get you on. Appreciate the time.
You're the man. Thanks for having me on.
Let's pause for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We are live from the Sutherland Studios here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.